Bootstrapped Web. We are back for the first episode of 2023. Here we go, Jordan.
Here we go. 2023, new year. Could make it last week because I was busy. I was away. I was on vacation. For some reason, the suburbs here in Chicago, kids have off the first week in January.
Oh, that's weird.
Yes. So they didn't go back to school until January 9th.
Oh, wow.
And so what that meant was we set up a vacation the first week in January. And I was riddled with guilt and anxiety because everyone's getting back to work and I'm trying to lead and I'm trying to, you know, make a push and get momentum. And I'm like, everyone get back to work. I'll be in Disneyland if you need me.
Yeah. That's actually really cool that your school district does that because
it kind of worked out. It worked out.
You can like skip all the crowds during the Christmas week and then, you know.
Yes. It allowed for being home for the holidays and New Year and then just bailing, which was really nice because, you know, you have a bunch of family over. And then by the end of like that whole thing, you're kind of done. And then we had an opportunity to go just the family. We went to Disney for a few days and then went to Santa Monica for a few days. And the kids are like old enough now where it's fun. We had a good time.
Hell yeah. Yeah, last year I think we did Disney officially for the last time for us.
Like, is that right?
Well, you know, we're like they're young enough to enjoy it. I think we've been twice now with our kids. So last year we were like, okay, we got our Disney day in. I think that'll be it on the Disneys. So yeah.
Yeah, we're good for a while. That's how we feel. It was a lot of fun. It was, yeah, the place is good.
Cool. We actually were able to squeeze in a quick ski trip last weekend. Got my girls up on the mountain for the first time this season. It's really fun now because they're really getting into it. And both of them are, even my little one is, they're getting on the chairlifts. We're doing greens and they just get really excited. So,
well, we are going skiing this weekend, but I'm prepared for it to be painful. Nice. We're going to a wedding in Traverse City, Michigan. Our best friends from college live up there, the restaurateurs, and their oldest daughter's having a bat mitzvah. So we're taking the whole gang. We're driving up there later today, which is why we're doing the podcast a little earlier. Thanks for accommodating. There's like a, I don't know, there's a hill over there that I guess they threw some ski lifts on and called a ski mountain. So we're gonna have a good time.
That's fun. Brad Tunar and I are right now in our final preparations for Big Snow Tiny Conf Vermont, which is happening next week. And then I'm home for a week, and then I go to Big Snow Tiny Conf Colorado. This is my annual routine, going to both of those trips in January and February, and I am so psyched. Like I think we're coming up on our like 9th or 10th year of doing this. So
I was gonna say you've been doing it for a while. It's good to see.
Yeah, we've got, you know, a private chef lined up. We've got the ski resort all lined up and a couple of Airbnbs. We plan out like a whole schedule. Pretty fun. It's interesting because like Colorado is like basically the same group. It's much more of a long time mastermind group of like 10 or 12 of us. And we hang out multiple times in the year. Vermont is like half returning people every year. And then we usually mix in a couple of new faces. So this year we've got a couple new folks joining us. I'm pretty excited.
Nice. Are you the only one that goes to both?
Brad and I both usually go to both. And there's like Robert Hartline sometimes goes to both and Charles sometimes goes to both. But yeah, that's it.
Very cool. Well, good time for it. It's January, Brian.
Yeah, man.
It is go time. I feel energized. Those 2 weeks off, like, did it. I think by the end of the year, I was crispy, man. I didn't have a high degree of tolerance for focused work. Everything felt painful. Everything felt insurmountable. Every big task, I was like, oh man, I don't want to do that today, but I guess I have to do it. I just like wasn't in a good place on the work front mentally. And like the 2 weeks off, like did it. I came back fired up.
Yeah, I did not take a break from work. People get sick and then they don't work, but I get sick and I work.
You just work through it? Jeez.
We didn't do family get-togethers this year for Christmas because my whole family was sick. So there was no travel or anything like that. But yeah, I got sick throughout. Like I said, I was sick through December. January, I'm better, except I still have an issue with my throat right now, which is like physically painful. I'm just working through it and I've been super focused, but there is so much work to do right now. Like, I feel behind on, you know, and we talked about this last episode. Like,
isn't that tough though? First, you know, January, like, and then feeling behind already. I mean,
there's just so much things I wanted to like, I just have such a long roadmap ahead, and I wanted to, I had these like check marks in my head of like, these need to ship in December. And now they are pushed into January, and they're gonna probably be pushed into February, mostly because of these two trips coming up for me. So
it drives me crazy because, right, I came back, and one of the first things I did was I got organized. And what that meant was I just took everything and I put it into a list. Just made me feel better. Handwritten list. It's 75 things. 75 tasks, you know? Some of them are important, some are not, some are nonsense, some are just to remember, some are like, you know, and then I create another list called priority, the things that like I really need to get done.
And that's like 72 things.
No, it's three things. I like force myself to like, no, if you're going to make a list, great, put it down on paper. And then what I've done is I have like my priority list, which is like three things. And then I have blocked out like hour and a half chunks throughout the week where it's just for those priorities. So because for me, the guilt comes from not doing the things that I know are important and get lost in the shuffle because I've got too many things.
I think you and I, we talk about this, but like you and I have very different work day-to-day routines. Like I'm much more about big, long projects. Like, so you have this list of a lot of individual tasks that need to get done. For me, I think in terms of like big projects that I'm working on. And right now I have like probably three or four huge projects happening simultaneously, which is about three projects more than I like to have. I like to be doing one big thing at a time and focus. But, you know, what that means is like, so, you know, we've got like two big features that have been dragging on through December into January because they are two major features that are very, very complex. And both of them are near the finish line, which means they're both pulling me in. Like my two developers are each working on, each of them is working on one, and I'm now pulled in to finalize and get both of these things like ship ready. Mm-hmm.
So you're carrying around the pressure, guilt, and task list of a founder and a product manager.
Yeah. Product manager is my main job in this business.
That's sure. A lot. Because I respect on that because I feel stretched.
That's where I always want to be, is on the product. That's my main thing as a person, as a founder.
Okay, that's what you like. Yeah, where I like to be, it's almost like writing down the list of 75 actually helped me not focus on the 75. And I have just those few priorities. And then the last few days, what I've actually enjoyed doing is thinking. I had an idea over the last 3 days simply because I cleared my mind enough to give it space to have that idea. And then I shared that idea in public, which is, I think, a topic that we should talk about at some point.
Yeah, I want to get right into that. Yeah, but like the other thing that like adds on to my mental space, because like the main thing that we need right now is to push through our product roadmap. And that's where I am needed the most every day.
Okay, so you're focused on the right thing.
Well, yeah, but I am still working on marketing and branding and just plans as we push into this repositioning stuff. I'll talk about this later in the episode, but you know, I'm starting the work on a new website, redesign, reposition, and working with a contractor on that. So that's like another project,
right,
that requires my, that, like that literally requires me to dedicate like two of my 5 days this week to writing out copy ideas and positioning plans and talking to contractors, you know, so.
My guess is the majority of people listening are having an experience more similar to yours. And it is some heroic shit. It is a lot. Mm-hmm. It's a lot.
It's a lot.
Yeah.
All right, dude, Joe. Working in public. I'm liking what I'm seeing on Jordan's Twitter feed this week.
Yeah. Like okay. So it's been fun. I would say, I want to say a year ago, but I think longer. When Carthook was kind of flying, I had a really good time on Twitter and in public and thinking and talking in public and kind of working in public and sharing what we were learning internally. And around the cataclysm of the Shopify issues and then moving out of Cardhook and raising money for Rally, like I kind of just went quiet for a while. I like didn't even know what I was okay talking about. I didn't know what was legally okay. I just didn't know what to do. And I just kind of clammed up. And then at some point, I got a bit turned off from Twitter and LinkedIn. The whole fast thing, the bolt, everything just kind of went crazy. And I was like, I don't even like this anymore. And now, Brian, what I'm trying to do, I'm trying to be the Twitter that I want to be in the world. Okay? I want Twitter to be what it used to be, full of honesty, transparency, like this like coordination. It's like this public square thing where you can be, you can ask questions, you can be humble, you can, I don't know, it's just open conversation.
On that note, I about 2 weeks ago, 2 or 3 weeks ago, I finally set up my handle on Mastodon.
Okay.
I don't even know. How do you even say it on a
Yeah, it's
a
Mastodon. Like, I don't like the idea.
Mastodon.social at Brian Castle or right. The other way around. I don't yes. know. But,
Flash app.
So, you know, and that's exactly what I wanted it to be. I wanted it to be like Twitter from the early days when it was not very large and my feed was not noisy with a bunch of crap. And people are just open and honest and asking and giving feedback on what they're working on. And that's what I've tried to do. But I log into Mastodon and it's just not active enough yet. Like there's not enough people there yet. And I still go to Twitter. So
yeah. And I like some of the concepts around Mastodon, but I don't like the implementation of like one person control. It's just a little weird. I don't think it quite got it right yet. We'll see where it goes. So I had a lot of the same feelings. And the conclusion I came to was – I'm just going to behave on Twitter the way that I would want Twitter to be. And I have been blocking and muting like crazy. Anyone that comes out and basically says, look at how awesome I am, mute, just zero hesitation, just mute. I see you talking about yourself in that way like 2 times, I'm out. No thanks. That's not the Twitter I want. I don't want
the same way. And I'm also the same. I've had that same attitude for a while on Twitter in terms of like what I choose to tweet. You know, the main thing for me has just been like, just keep it positive. And, you know, because there's just so much negativity. People like just whatever, like calling out things that they don't like or.
Yeah, like this criticism thing.
Yeah, criticizing or like.
Criticism, bragging.
Humble bragging in the form of like, you're doing it wrong and, yes, and I'm doing it right.
Yeah, that version of advice is
like
gross.
I'm just like, don't tell me out of my feed.
Don't tell people what to do. So over the holidays, I basically came to the conclusion, like, all right, it's time. I remember how useful it was. It is powerful, right? It is a powerful thing for feedback and attention. And so what I'm trying to do on Twitter and on LinkedIn, thanks to my director of marketing kicking me in the shin long enough to basically be like, you cannot
ignore finally LinkedIn. Get on LinkedIn after 20 years.
It's extremely active. I'll say that much. It is really, really active.
Yeah. But what I liked about what I'm seeing from you on Twitter this week is legit work in public, build in public stuff.
That's what I'm trying to do.
I think you guys launched a major feature this week, right? Like
we launched Coinbase.
Yeah.
And so that's our first crypto payment integration.
But then what I saw was you followed up with like, okay, like here's an actual product question that I need feedback on what we should build and why and the design and the interface. I saw a couple of those from you this week,
yes,
which is really cool.
Okay. So that's like, I tried to figure out how am I going to be okay with myself? How am I not going to feel like a hypocrite and go out and talk about, hey, we crossed X number of millions. Like, I don't want to do that. How do I do it authentically? And that's my attempt this week to come out and basically say, if you're focused on the product, thumbs up. If you're asking questions and engaging authentically, right, thumbs up. And then it almost
asking questions is big. It's bigger than people realize because it gets responses. People are not going to respond. Even if people like seeing the brag posts or the whatever, you know, the vague platitudes and all that bullshit. Like people might like that tweet, but they won't reply to it or they won't debate it or they won't this or that. But if you ask a question, it's like I need feedback, I need help. Here's a challenging thing. Get people to like stop and dig into it and think about it. And like you asked the thing about like we've got this layout on our checkout. We've got a bunch of
what do we do?
you know, like I think you were deciding between like buy now, some buttons are like one click to purchase, a couple require a couple of clicks, and like what, how should we label these? How should we separate them? You know?
Okay. So the way that came about is the way I describe internally is building up the muscle, basically these like pathways in your brain to incorporate working in public alongside what you're doing privately. I lost that muscle. Those pathways don't exist the same way they used to. I used to do something cool internally at Cardhook and think, that's valuable because here's what I learned. And I'd go out to Twitter and be like, hey, we didn't feel like we were talking to our customers enough when we were missing it. So we created a meeting called What Our Customers Are Saying. And Ryan brought it in and it was his suggestion. And here's like a picture of us doing it. And here's why we find it valuable. Like that muscle to basically work privately and extract value from it for the public is what I'm trying to do. So what happened was we released Coinbase Commerce, and then I go in and I test it out in our one of our demo stores. And as I went through it, I always try to have like a shopper's mind. Like, I don't know what this product is. Let me go through this checkout as if I'm a shopper. And what I noticed was, oh, that's cool that you have Coinbase Commerce, but I don't know that you have it as a payment option until I get to the third step. Is there a way to telegraph that from the first? And what I'm trying to do is then take that and say, that is a valuable, difficult question. Let me go be public with it instead of keeping it private.
I like it, man, because it's like, when you think about building in public, especially on Twitter, first of all, there's this whole thing that gets completely conflated, which I don't think is correct. People think that like sharing your MRR graph is building in public. To me, that's just bragging and it's not very helpful. But building in public to me is about product and design and asking questions and actively seeking feedback. In my case, a lot of it, it's just like, look, I worked really hard on this thing for the last 3 weeks. I'm pretty proud of it. I want to share it. I just like, just look at this thing I built. I want to see what you've built. Like I love digging into interfaces of something that you just spent the last 3 weeks thinking deeply about and making a lot of creative decisions. Like, I just want to see the output. Like, that's why I loved the website dribble.com, where it was like just design. I still go on there, like designers just sharing their work, right? That's helpful from a, like, yes, you can get some benefits of from building in public, like building an audience and getting engagement and people follow your story. I mean, that's why people listen to this podcast, because they like to follow our stories. And that, there's no getting around it. That has definitely brought business benefits, I think, to both of
us.
That's
right. And can we just take a pause and say thank you to, I think it was Justin Jackson that said something that meant a lot. Thank you
very much. Yeah, I mean, several people commented on last week's episode, which seemed to resonate pretty well.
Thank you.
Thank you, everyone, over the years. It's been amazing. I love doing this. There definitely are like benefits. Another random benefit is hiring. You know, like I'm talking to a guy about potentially working with him on a website design project. I never knew him before. And he reached out because he follows us.
Yeah, let's talk about the
benefits. But another thing about building in public, though, like to me, it's also customer research.
It's like authentic marketing with all these ancillary benefits along with it.
But it's a way to know what really resonates in a product. Like there might be a major feature to you. It might be major. Maybe it's requiring a ton of dev hours. Maybe you just think it's important in your. But I've seen so many times when like major features didn't end up being that major, but the tiny features end up being like, oh shit, that's amazing. You know,
and people talk about it. Yeah.
Like we released this thing called, you know, a little warning on the recorder in Zip Message if you don't have your mic turned on. Like after 3 seconds, if you start a recording and you're not getting any audio, we'll detect that and warn you. And it took us like 2 days to ship that.
Mm-hmm. But it's very thoughtful.
And I just posted a static screenshot of the warning, and users love it. And it was like a tiny thing, you know. I heard Adam Wathen talk about this before, like long-term, whether you're launching businesses, just being public about stuff. A lot of times, like we all have our own ideas of what we think is important to put out in the world. And so that's what we choose to work on. But you will never know what is actually going to resonate with everyone else. So by sharing as much as possible in public, that's how you start to get a feel for like, oh, that resonated. Like, you know, going back years ago when I started the productized stuff, productized course and teaching about that, it was because I had like one blog post about it and that resonated. And then it just sort of kept snowballing from there, you know?
Yeah, I think it's important to acknowledge that there is benefit. It's okay to actually seek the benefit. Like one of the most important things, maybe the most important part of the decision to, yes, I should be on social media more, on Twitter and LinkedIn specifically, that was for business benefit. I think I can help the business if I get out there more. The reason it then went through like a challenging, like, well, how do I do that authentically, is because I didn't want to feel crappy about myself just like seeking just the benefit in a way that I don't like, because really I won't keep up with it then.
That's the thing with LinkedIn for me. I just haven't found it. Like, I can build in public on Twitter and I can build in public on this podcast because these are the two places where I actually enjoy to hang out.
Right,
I enjoy hanging out.
Yeah, that's right. You can be
LinkedIn. I have no personal interest in hanging out there, but I do have a personal interest in growing the business, and I see that as an opportunity. I just wish I could somehow fit it into my personal routine. I don't know how to do that.
I'm with you. It took me a while, and I told I pinged Elizabeth yesterday, and I was like, "You won because I moved LinkedIn to my home screen on my iPhone." So I'm.
What do you actually do on LinkedIn? Like, literally, what's your routine there?
My brain thinks Twitter first. When I had the idea yesterday about these fast features and how close I feel that we are to nailing their value prop, I had that idea like two nights ago. I brought it to Rock and Jess, and I'm like, so I'm just thinking out loud here. This was Fast's core value proposition. I think we're like two features away from it. Should we build it? How do we find out if it's worth building? You know, that whole thing. So when I think about that and I say to myself, I'm going to take that public instead of keeping it private, I think Twitter. And then I think about, well, how do I translate this for LinkedIn? And there's a few things happening on LinkedIn. Some people are LinkedIn native and they will write a long post. What I did...
That's like LinkedIn's like sort of like article writer.
Area. Their post, you could write long posts in their post. There's no limitation in that way. What I did this time is I actually, let me correct myself, Elizabeth took my tweets, made them into images, and then I posted a bit of commentary and then posted four images so it would turn into a carousel. And evidently,
you mean a screenshot of your tweets?
Yes, four screenshots of the four tweet thread. So what Elizabeth's trying to like get me to understand is you don't actually have to translate that tweet thread into a post. You can keep it as a tweet thread, put it into a carousel, and carousels actually get priority on the timeline.
Oh,
so you can add a little – yeah, it's like, all right, I don't know. I'm learning.
I never thought of that method. That's really interesting.
Yes. Yeah. And it feels weird when you're just on LinkedIn and someone just like posts a screenshot of their tweet. That feels a little lame. So I added some commentary.
Yeah, but it's almost like I could totally see how that's – because even on Twitter, when you see people screenshot something from somewhere else, it's like, that must be important that they took the time to screenshot it. You know, yes. Like,
well, I did it. One of my tweets this week was a screenshot from LinkedIn saying, hey, look at this conversation happening on LinkedIn. So I don't really know what I'm doing, but I'm trying to learn both on what works and what doesn't, what I enjoy doing.
Yeah, man. I like it. I probably have like 10,000 like LinkedIn requests. That have just built up over like the last 8 years of me never logging in, you know.
same. All right, what's going on, man? What's happening on your
side? One thing that you know, people have been giving us some feedback from last episode is this idea of company of one building with contractors that I was talking about. This is nothing new, certainly not new for me, and I know many other founders who use this approach in their companies. But I think it's one of those things that just doesn't get talked about enough. We can maybe, you know, chat about that for a second. So like what I was talking about last week was that, you know, going forward in 2023, again, this isn't really a major shift. I think what sort of resonated was I was describing how I do want to build a team culture. I would love to build the business to a point where we have a great small, tight-knit team culture, but we're not there yet as a business. And until we get there, I am a solo founder. I'm essentially a company of one, but I have contractors who help execute the projects that we need to execute. And looking back, that's how I've built all of my businesses.
All right. So
over the years.
So A, it feels smart and very relevant. And I think an approach a lot of people take, even if they don't kind of like call it that. Now, when you do that, how are you team building? How are you turning it into like this fun project that people work on? Instead of just like you mercenary style, like do this screen, you do this screen, and I'll do everything in the middle.
This is where a little bit of the tension comes in for me personally, because I wanted to build a culture of team, you know, camaraderie and fun and being part of a mission, and we're all in this together sort of thing. And we were sort of doing that a little bit last year. I had contractors, but I was looking to hire people who were on these like long-term retainers, and they act as if they are employees, but they're, it's just long-term retainers. And going back to audience ops, I built a really successful team atmosphere there, even though everyone was on these like long-term contractor roles. Technically, they were still in our Slack day-to-day, many of them for many years, but they're still technically part-time contractors. And I was trying to do the same thing with in audience ops and in ZipMessage. And now I've sort of scaled back even more to a point where I have my two developers long-term every day, but I've got a handful of other, like maybe 3-4 other contractors working on other projects with a defined start and end as needed.
You know? In terms of
and
project.
And so the tension, what I meant is like, as we head into 23, I've pulled back on the idea of like, okay, everyone on the team, we're all going to post a weekly stand-up update. And everyone on the team, let's post photos of what we did over the weekend with our families.
Like, you pulled back on that a little.
Pulled back on that stuff. And I want to be doing that stuff, mm-hmm. but we're smaller than that right now. These project-based contractors, they're not even in our Slack because they're just projects.
So you're setting up like the atmosphere and environment that you want. And it is sending a specific message to those people. It sounds like that's the message that you want to send. You don't, right? You're purposely moving away from the team building, team culture.
It's just that that's not the reality of what we have today.
Okay. Let me,
but it's not like I don't want that. Like okay, I could go hire people and have them on an every week retainer or a full-time salary. And then we will have our weekly stand-ups and it'll be fun and we can post photos, but
what's the difference?
But we don't have the budget for that and the business need for that right now. So that's just not the reality. The reality is we have contractors who I'm going to collaborate closely on. Like we're right now kicking off a big website redesign, repositioning thing that, you know, a lot of work. So I'm talking to a designer about working together for a period of 2 to 3 months. And we're going to work closely together. We're going to have a lot of ZipMessage conversations back and forth. You know, we're going to be in Figma together. We're going to, you know, we're going to be doing stuff together, but it's either redundant or not helpful or just a waste of time to have that person posting weekly stand-up meetings and culture
stuff. Is that
because
they're not full-time?
Yeah, because they're not full-time. Like they're working with me for 3 months. They probably have other clients that they're working with. And after this project is over, we're going to be over for now.
You don't want to pretend like you're making a commitment that you're not making. So it's an honest approach to that.
And there are other contractors who are on longer term stuff. So I have an SEO team. Like they're a small shop that I just started up with. The intention is to work with them on a monthly basis for a long period of time. But I know that like I'm just one of their clients in their roster. They are not employees of my company. It's just a contractor relationship. They're not in my Slack. They're not in our Notion except for a couple of specific pages. That's the relationship. The only ones that are closer to quote unquote team members are my developers, two developers, and a virtual assistant. And technically the difference is those three people and myself are in our Slack and have like more of a team member view in Notion. Like they see all the pages.
And it's more consistent. It feels like the commitment is long term and full time.
Yes, and their roles are the developers just develop product, but the VA is more miscellaneous kind of stuff. Even with them, I pulled back. Like we were doing these weekly stand-ups. asynchronously using Zip Message, which was really great for a while. We were doing that all year long. And I would still, like, once we have a larger team with more regular team members, we will get back to that. And this is not like advocating for like, don't do async standups, because I fully believe they were valuable. We just don't have that team and workflow right now, but we will in the future again. So, because right now it doesn't make sense for my developers to spend time on a Friday, post an update on the stuff that they've been working on, when me and my developers talk about the stuff they're working on every day of the week. Like, there's no point.
You know? Right. So, it would just be like this formality to kind of get used to being more formal as you get bigger type of a thing.
Yeah. No point. It's like, just, we're working lean here. We don't need any extra crap.
The semantics around full-time employment, contractor, and so on. If you look at our company from a legal point of view, I think it's six people that are W-2 full-time employees. And then it's all contractors. But they're in Europe. And so because of that, they can't be W-2. But we very consciously make it feel full-time. And our policies around everything are everything gets treated equally. Everyone gets equity in the same way. Everyone gets time off in the same way. Everyone gets the same, I don't know, home office budget allowance. So very, very early on, we made this decision of like, we are going to be the type of company that when you are a contractor, you feel the same exact experience as a W-2 American employee. That has been really important for us in terms of loyalty, because a lot of people have not been treated that same way by American companies. And they come into ours like, whoa, this is how it should feel.
Yeah. Correct me if I'm wrong, but those people are essentially working full time for Rally. Yes,
I think that's the thing. It's the full time commitment.
Like, I mean, in terms of hours, right? And like they don't have other, maybe they do have other like side hustles.
Maybe side projects.
But those are side. Like it's not like you are equal with like three or four other clients for them.
No. And I think it's that and the open-ended nature. It's not a project. Like, we have a contractor that we work with right now that's helping on enterprise sales, and it is a 6-month contract. So there we get confused. We don't know which Slack channels to let them in. We don't, it's weird, and it's not as good as when it's full time where everything's clear. So I guess we are learning on that side, and it is murky. It's not clear.
Yeah, man. What else we got on our list here? We did ask Twitter for some things.
I don't know if anyone came up with stuff. One thing that I can talk about, there's definitely a big focus for us on momentum in January. We had this experience where in December, we had a lot of go-to-market activity in October, November. And we grew nicely. And then December, everything went real quiet. And we were afraid. Like, we were like, you know, basically, she's not calling us back. She must not be interested, was the feeling. But we knew it was December and everyone's busy in this holidays and all this other stuff. So we knew logically that it was that. But emotionally, we were like, are they going to call us back in January?
I felt the same way. I saw our numbers slow down the last week of December. I was like, what's going on? And then they picked up again in January. You know?
Right. You know what's going on. You don't even have to ask, but you still cannot help yourself. Yeah. But I hope
I'm sitting there on New Year's Eve. I'm like, why aren't people starting trials of my product right now?
How come no one's as obsessed with my MRR as I am? So fortunately, it happened as expected. January hits and then everything just ramps back up and everyone's like, hey, I'm ready to talk now and can we get things started and sorry, I didn't call you back type of a feeling. So that's been great. And for us, that has coincided with something, a very positive experience in my eyes. And that is sensing a change in the air around e-commerce and headless commerce and all this stuff. And that is characterized by open criticism of Shopify. For a very long time, it felt like open criticism was bad for your career. It was bad for your agency. It was bad for your brand. It was not healthy. And playing along and playing nice and telling Toby and Harley how brilliant they are on Twitter was like an annoying thing that I had to just deal with, even though privately I would talk to people and they were really frustrated. And that frustration seems to have spilled out. and is now openly being aired on Twitter and LinkedIn.
And so you're much more in e-commerce Twitter than I am. Yes, so like, what are you seeing? Like, what does this look like?
So Shopify did something very smart. The very first thing, I think January 3rd, right? Like the first 24 hours that people are back at work, huge announcement from the Shopify PR machine, accompanied by articles and PR and all these things about Shopify components. And that is their staking out a position in headless. And what Shopify is very good at is recycling existing features and adding a large layer of marketing to it so that it sounds like something new. And then when you look underneath, it's actually not very new, but it does what they need. It gets the attention, it gets the press. But the important thing is those two happening at the same time, this spilling out of frustration and Shopify staking like a specific position around headless, those two tell me that there's stuff happening in the air. That means those 1 to 10 million a year Shopify merchants that were like the bread and butter, the base, those people are struggling. And my assumption is the percentage of those merchants that are moving up to Shopify Plus has fallen by, 90%, if not more? And so they're starting to look at that segment of the market, and that is not going, it's not going up anytime soon. And so where they are staking out territory is in the enterprise and trying to wave their hands and say, hey, one, you don't need to leave Shopify if you want to go headless. And two, if you're an enterprise considering going headless, you can come to Shopify. Those two things are very good. I like seeing all of that stuff.
Yeah, it's just like bringing energy into this side of the market.
Yes, yes.
From the big elephant.
Yes, exactly right. So that is very motivating. Because it feels like, okay, this is the 6 months stretch. A year ago, if we had made this big push around, you got to go headless, here's how, I don't think the market would have been so open to it. And right now it feels like ripe.
Yeah. So are you also thinking about the product? Like, okay, what is our answer to Shopify? Like, so they made this big splash in January. A couple months from now on sales calls, people will be a little bit more aware of that existing in the market. So how do we answer the question of like, well, how is this different from Shopify components? Like, do you think through that?
To a degree, it would be more accurate to say that the way we think about it is we can now go after Shopify merchants much more. That's at least the angle that I look at it, because a year ago when we first started going to market and had like, you know, the first few people starting to use the product, I think it was really about a year ago. I think we onboarded the very, very first early customers in like February or March. So when we did that, we basically said to ourselves, it's pointless to go after Shopify merchants. We can't win them. None of them want to go to BigCommerce or Swell, the platforms that we integrated with. So let's just focus on these other merchants.
So now like technically, does this mean like Rally can be plugged in to Shopify stores? Like,
nope. In many ways, what Shopify is doing, they're actually moving closer to where our product is. And they're saying you can use our checkout without using our front end. And you can also—
I see. So you're saying that you can go after the customers who are considering using Shopify's checkout without Shopify—
That's right. All of this unhappiness and the way
the battle is over. Like, okay, now that you're looking at Shopify as just a checkout component, look, there's an even better. We've been headless since day one.
Right. There's like a real checkout.
We're designed for a real
headless option.
We're a legit player in headless if that's what you want to do.
Yes, yeah. because Shopify is bullshit. The whole components is bullshit. There's no flexibility the way they claim there is. They're actually locking their checkout down even further. But they're allowing developers to do certain other things. In reality, if you're an enterprise merchant, you look at Shopify, I think you will quickly conclude that it does not give you the flexibility that people are actually after for headless. So it just feels much more like
Shopify like take their normal percentage on their headless components. Like it's like, why would you even, I don't know, who knows?
Yes, yes. So it just feels like much more open season. And now a lot of our marketing, whereas we didn't feel the confidence to wave over Shopify merchants and say this is a better option, Now it feels like those merchants will be much more open to alternatives. And you see it in the open criticism and you see it in the response, right? Shopify comes out, Shopify components, headless, enterprise. A year ago, everyone's fawning over how brilliant they are. And now the commentary is like, oh, another feature you're not going to follow through with. What about this other thing and this other thing and this other thing that you promised over the last years that you didn't do? Which that wasn't a part of the public conversation. So I just like feel like, ooh, the market's moving around. And now is the time to come out there and say, here's this new way to build. And I think over the next few weeks, you and I will talk about how we're trying to create content in order to capitalize on that.
Yeah. More of what we were talking about, shipping stuff and sharing it publicly. And, you know, I love it. And like, just like a rapid succession of like feature improvement, like more headless, like more, you know?
Yeah. It is an interesting thing. Product momentum.
Yeah.
And the perception of product momentum.
I still see that in my graph too. And like, it's like part of what's frustrating me about the last 2 months with us being so slow to ship these two big features. It means I haven't announced a new feature in like almost 2 months, you know? And I see that in the graph. Like we have more customer activity in the months where we send new feature announcements.
Right. What I found over the last like week of doing this was the announcements are obviously the big things. Here's this new thing that feels amazing to push out there. But when you share publicly along the way, it gives much more of the perception of progress than if you just were quiet for a month and then announced.
Yeah, I know. And I've been wanting to share more of what we're building right now because it's awesome, like the workflows and the subthreads. But and I've been like too busy to like do the screenshots and share it. But I got to get on that as we sort of like lead up to shipping these in a few weeks.
Yeah. One of the comments I got was from someone I know and respect, Chuthri. She was like, whoa, Rally team's been busy. And I was like, we're always this busy, but we just don't know about it.
Yeah.
Yes, yes. And that kind of caught me like, huh, you know, but the perception is reality thing, or in our case, it's, you know, reality is reality, but you got to make sure you show it. Otherwise, the perception is actually, well, there is no opposite perception. It's just they don't think of you. there's nothing there, the absence of any perception.
Totally. Can we squeeze in a quick update on ChatGPT?
Sure.
I'm going to throw a curveball here.
I actually have it on my list, but go ahead.
Oh, awesome. All right. Because this came from Twitter today. We did our thing where we asked for topic ideas for Bootstrap Web like 2 minutes before we hit record. So the one or two people who could squeeze in a request actually get on the show. So Christian Ganko, thank you for the question you asked about. You were like, talk about ChatGPT and then ask ChatGPT what we should talk about. I tried that, but it doesn't know what Bootstrap Web is.
All right. Well,
I do want to give an update since the last time we talked about it about a month ago. It's in my life now.
Is that right?
I mean, yeah, big time.
In what ways? Have you signed up for any products? Are you paying for AI-based software?
Okay. So two things. This is in my workflow during work. Coding. I use ChatGPT. I ask it code questions at least 3 to 5 times a day. Now.
Is it your first place you go to ask a question?
I do go to it more now than Googling and going on Stack Overflow.
Whoa. No question. Whoa.
It has replaced, I would say, 90% of Stack Overflow for me is now in ChatGPT. I'm also using it frequently enough to notice that sometimes it gives me the wrong information. You know, I've seen that happen several times.
So you're ready for ChatGPT-4. You're ready.
Yes. And I'm definitely aware of that. And I'm talking like very specific questions like this line of code, what does it mean? Mm-hmm. Or I need to write a line or two of code that accomplishes this. What's the best way to do that? And it will help with that. I actually downloaded, what's the name of this little Mac app? MacGPT?
It's some
free thing that puts it up in the menu bar on Mac. I can just... Okay. Keyboard shortcut, ask it a question.
Goodness. It's exciting, isn't it? I know it's a lot of hype and the VCs are jumping on it and talking about how you, whatever they're talking about.
The other one that I just finally got on is GitHub Copilot.
Okay. That I've heard a lot about.
And it was funny because I sort of knew that it was out there, but I had never played around with it. I never really researched it. I was like, that's a lot of work. I don't want to get into it.
Right, right.
And then in my day-to-day usage of ChatGPT, of just asking it code questions, I was like, man, I tweeted this. I was like, man, it would be so much better if I could sort of plug in my code, my entire code base, my repo for ZipMessage into ChatGPT so that anytime I ask it a question, it has the full context of my project. And I can know, like, when I ask it something, it can say, like, well, you have this configuration in your environment, or you've already built this controller over there for that. So you can't do that with ChatGPT.
Maybe. But Copilot does that?
But Copilot is built into GitHub. Our repo is on GitHub.
Oh, yeah. So you realize you had it there the whole time.
Yeah, but it's a product that you have to subscribe to. So I actually did start a trial of Copilot. I think based on my usage so far, I'll intend to pay for it when the trial is up. It's like a 90-day trial or something like that. It's crazy. The only thing with it is that I use Sublime Text, and that's not an officially supported text editor for Copilot, but somebody made a third-party plugin that does pull in Copilot into Sublime. It's a little bit janky, but it works. And the difference between, and this is for the technical folks listening, the difference between, because now I use them equally, ChatGPT and Copilot, right? Copilot completes my sentences when I'm typing code into Sublime. So it knows what I'm about to type. So if I have to write a whole function that's going to be maybe 3 to 5 to 20 lines long, something like that, once I write 2 to 3 first words of that function,
it just goes.
It's going to guess what I'm about to write, and it's going to suggest what I'm about to write. And it has that knowledge based on my entire repo. Like, it'll autocomplete with, like, you know, function names, method names that I've defined elsewhere in the project. Like, it knows all that stuff. And it also gets smarter the more and more I use it. And I think there's some recency stuff. So, like, if I've used, like, these 10 files recently, it'll pull more info from those. So it's like Copilot is for auto-completing what I'm already about to write. ChatGPT is for, like, I don't know what to write, so I need help in figuring out strategically what the best way to implement this is.
You know? So on a scale of 1 to 10, how would you feel if you could no longer use this product?
I tweeted this as well about the pricing. I intend to pay for ChatGPT whatever. I'm not going to say, like, whatever they're going to charge for it, but I believe that it's going to be extremely low priced, like way below what I would be willing to pay for it.
Yeah, that's right.
And that's because they are huge. They're going for the huge thing. They're taking on Google here.
The Microsoft deal is
yeah. The Microsoft is super interesting. Yeah,
super interesting. It's like a nonprofit that, like, the whole thing is pretty wild.
It is pretty wild. First of all, like, I didn't even know there are multiple things that I'm just hearing bits and pieces of on podcasts and Twitter. First of all, the Microsoft thing, they're working OpenAI stuff into Bing. This is Microsoft's
play. Excel, the whole Office suite.
Yeah. So this is their play at, like, making a run at Google finally.
Right. Like, is it, like, we know Google got fat and slow, like, because they built the greatest money machine of all time. But is it happening now? Are they going to pay the price? They're definitely not going to go gently into that good night, not with their war chest. But damn, it's exciting again. Microsoft's like in the game. The $10 billion, the 49%, the reversion after the loan, and the
certain exactly up. That's the other interesting, like, thing about it. I mean, Tyler Tringas was tweeting about this because it's very similar.
Dude, to that the sounds like something that your LLC and my LLC would come up with, like, to do a deal together. You know, not.
He shared this thing about, like, it's essentially
a comm company.
it's like literally it's very similar to the model on the comm company terms, except that, like, that one is like $92 billion gets, you know, that's when it sort of flips back. It's
but crazy. Then it goes back, what, 49% to Microsoft, then 49% to the investors.
I didn't get into the details of it, but doesn't OpenAI sort of, like, retain, like, back to their, like, I think most of their equity after they pay back, like, $92 billion in profits or something like that?
No, it goes to, like, a nonprofit foundation.
Oh, wow. Okay.
It's almost like this is so, it's so potentially impactful on so many things that it's almost really good and important that the founders of it seem to be, one, like already rich as shit, right? So Sam Altman's kind of all good anyway. And I feel like that helps. And at least it appears to not have the same type of an egotistical drive to dominate the world, like a Bezos, Elon, you know, Salesforce, Benioff type of a thing. Because this thing's gnarly, man. You don't know where it's going to go.
I really don't know anything about it, but when you talk about like the reverting to a nonprofit, it sort of reminds me of like the WordPress situation where like automatic sort of controls the WordPress nonprofit organization. Mm-hmm. So
yeah,
technically
whatever WordPress did, I think it didn't quite work out the way it was supposed to. I think that was one of the weirdest situations I've ever heard in business on the internet. It was a crazy situation.
It'll be interesting to see in the future how the relationship between OpenAI, the company, and the whatever nonprofit runs this thing.
Right. But you could see like that type of a company with a founder that has a, you know, quote, like standard mindset, like that person could be like the first trillionaire. Because this stuff can go so far in so many different places, and you own the underlying layer that everyone uses and builds onto applications on top of.
They've been shipping features too, ChatGPT. One of the ones that I love is that they now have this sidebar that keeps track of all your recent queries. And like whenever you do one, like it uses GPT to like title your query for you.
Let me guess what you're going to ask me.
No, like this sidebar thing lists all the things, but it creates like summarized versions of what I asked on each thing.
Okay.
Like automatically.
Yeah. Let me rephrase that for you a bit more articulately, idiot.
Yeah.
Look, speaking of working in public, anyone out there who's really into ChatGPT, one of the like, quote, like ideas on my list is a ChatGPT integration. How do we use ChatGPT as a front-end integration to a checkout? Where is that going? What is a valuable application of being able to buy in a non-traditional checkout? Right? Like, how do you just take a URL and say, buy this product in Medium in blue with my Amex to my regular address? Enter and then buy it, right?
Because like a natural speech.
Yes, exactly right. Like a natural conversational checkout experience.
I hear what you're saying. I don't quite see that. Like and the connection I draw there is with Amazon Alexa, and I think the news recently is that they're basically like winding that down.
No one does that. Yes,
because no one does that, and they had originally launched Alexa because their hope was people would be standing in their kitchen and they say, "Hey Alexa, order me some more milk," or whatever.
Yes.
You know, and just people don't buy that way. You know,
no, I don't think it's the right context.
They want to see what's in their cart. They want to know what they're about to buy without just hoping that the AI understood what I said, right?
Yes. I'm not sure. Look, it will 100% have an impact on e-commerce, period. Like, no question.
I could see it happening more in the shopping experience and less on the actual checkout. I don't know. Like, you're looking at a product. Here's some information about that product. You might want to look at these other ones. I know that already exists, but I think AI will definitely be integrated in almost every product where you're creating content. I would assume at some point in the future we'll have some AI content generation in our messaging tool. It's already in Notion.
Right. We just feed it our historical podcast transcripts.
My friend Brecht just shared the other day his workflow for his podcast in his business, Brecht Palumbo. For some of you might remember his podcast, Bootstrapped with Kids, from back in the day. He was telling me the other day about his podcast workflow. Is he records a podcast with a guest, gets it transcribed using Descript, feeds the transcription into Notion. The AI in Notion automatically summarizes like the 45-minute conversation into three paragraphs, and that's the show notes for the episode. Done. And he was like, it's crazy accurate too.
Yeah, very, very
that's
cool.
The future.
Well, we can go on for, you know, I got all day, but I guess we should call it.
Yeah, we should probably get back to work.
It's been like an hour. All right, well, we're back on it. I'm heading up to Traverse City. We'll go have a nice weekend.
Yeah, we'll probably have a couple of weeks off on the feed because I'm going to Big Snows, but
we'll
be back on it as soon as we can.
All right.
Actually, next week we might be able to get one in. So.
Okay, cool. I want to keep it going, be more consistent this year for sure. Nathaniel, thanks for the question on blockchain and crypto. We'll try to get to that next week. Thanks for listening, everyone.
All right. Later, folks.
See you.